Bob, on one hand, it was nice to see Oviedo on the mound last night. I think sometimes with these injuries, we tend to say, oh, you know, whether it's a knee injury in football, Tommy John, whatever, technology is so good, medicine's so good these days, these guys will be back for sure. I mean, that's to be out of the game that long is a major blow to your career. So good for him that he got back on the mound. It was rough going in that first inning, however. And I thought that they made the right move by pulling him from the game. Did you?
Yeah, just 43 pitches. That was enough. He battled to get out of it to keep it a 2-0 game. But yeah, it's all the work that goes into the rehab that comes after that. That is a tough, tough injury to have. And just, you could tell the joy of him getting back there. And then at the other end of it was Dari Moretta, who made his debut this year the other day. But last night was very good and ended up getting the win in this game. Same situation.
Well, let's bring on Michael McHenry here to talk all things Pirates. You know him from his career as a catcher here.
The Fort.
And also from his career as an analyst, which is happening right now. And he is on the Sullivan Super Service Fan Hotline, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. And you can watch him, too, on YouTube. He's right in between us. There he is, Bob. Look over at the monitor. Wave hello to
Michael. It's a McHenry sandwich.
It is. All right, Michael. We could start with a million different things. I want to start at first base and whether we think Spencer Horwitz is going to be an answer here. I mean, it's been a slog at times, but now look, all of a sudden his OPS rising. He has showed some power. So that's my question, I guess, is do you see Horwitz as a guy who will hit enough to be a long-time first baseman here? Is there some latent power there that we don't know about yet?
Yeah, it depends on how you construct the lineup, first off. If there's power in Nicky G's bat at second base and he can be in the top tier there, you can make up for some of the power that I don't think Horwitz is maybe going to show, especially at our ballpark. That's the one thing we don't talk about enough. He's not a Deadpool lefty like Jack Sawinski, who's going to pop 25 homers because of that short porch. He's a guy that's going to be a line drive guy. He's going to put together good at bats. I think seeing him around that 740 to 780 OPS, you know, popping double digit homers year in, year out, but putting together good at bats, leading off. I do like where he's at. And he's played good defense for me too. I think it took a little time to get his feet underneath him due to the injury. You think about getting traded over here and then saying, oh yeah, by the way, my wrist is broke. I need surgery. Then you have to watch your guys as you're getting to know them. You go after it, spring training, you're not with them, and then you go rehab by yourself. It's a very tough road. I heard you guys talking about rehab and everything else. It's even tougher when you're new trainers, new coaches, and then trying to get your footing in the big leagues of where you fit. And then they finally put him in that leadoff spot, and that obviously is where he was most comfortable and where he fits. I do think he's an answer. I don't know about long-term. I'd have to see him hit left-handed pitching a lot more. He hit that homer in Colorado. It was really good to see. He's very articulate with his understanding of his swing and who he is. So he could do it. I really do believe that. It's going to be interesting kind of how this all unfolds with all the trades we just had. We traded for some right-handed power bats in the minor leagues. You know, Indy Rodriguez eventually going to come back. And there may be opportunities where there's a little bit more platooning. But he's been great as of late, like you said.
You know, it's interesting. The Pirates have done a lot of historic things, both good and bad. This year, one of the good ones was Horwitz in the leadoff spot with six runs batted in. This is after Peguero has three home runs in the same situation. What about Leover Peguero? We've been talking about his name for a long time, Michael. And, you know, he's got some bat speed, certainly. We saw that in Colorado. But how sustainable is all of that? And what are your expectations for him to be on this roster next year?
It depends on if he plays for me, to be honest. I mean, that you see the ability, you see the talent. I mean, he made a sliding play at shortstop yesterday that just about nobody on our team would get to, because he is in that 93, 94 percentile in speed. He's got a plus arm. He's got a real barrel on his bat, but he's going to have some swing and miss. He's going to have some hiccups, but I think that's part of the road. I think now is the time the Pirates have to choose. They have to pick guys. Are we going to give Jack Sawinski, you know, 150, 200 at bats to finish out this thing and see if the power jumps back? I believe it would. But those are the questions I have going into next year more than, you know, will he be here next year? I hope so, because when I first saw this kid, he had that little waggle with his bat, little hitch, and it looked like Hanley Ramirez, the way he was built, the way he moved, everything he did. And I feel like he's got a lot of that swagger back. I want to double down on it if I can, because we need some of those guys with high energy like him.
Mike Burrows goes tonight. Michael, do you think after the Pirates moved Bailey Falter that Burrows can be a guy that they can count on moving forward in the rotation?
Without question. Now, I think Falter's a great person to comp him with, because we've seen Mike Burrows gotten to the sixth. He's always going to be a high swing and miss, high foul ball. It's going to be tough for him to get seven innings in, eight innings in, but that 5-6 inning range with 7 to 10 strikeouts may be his norm. And his demeanor and his psychopath eyes personality when he does interviews and stuff, he's a different animal. He wants to take your soul when he's on the mound. And I love dudes like that when I'm catching. I love dudes like that for the Pirates, because we are Pirates. And I think sometimes we forget that. We need to go out and take what we want. And I think he's that guy that's going to do that. I think he fits in perfect. When talking to Matt Capps today, the fact we have Paul Skeens at the top, it takes a lot of pressure off these young guys coming up, because nobody has to feel like they're taking in the void, because this guy will take a black hole and turn it into the sun.
Micah McHenry on the Sullivan Super Service Fan Hotline. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Michael, Friday night's game was borderline surreal. You get off to a 9-0 lead. Have you ever been part of something like that? Not like that, because I don't think there's been too many in history, but where you've had an amazing comeback from many, many runs down, or the other side where you blow a lead like that. You remember any of those?
I actually looked it up. I played in Colorado for 3 years. So yes, I was a part of some weird stuff. Nothing to that extent. Nothing. I mean, it was wild. We had 2 9-run leads.
Yes.
We had a 6-run lead in the eighth, a 4-run lead in the ninth. Santana had given up one run in 21 and a third innings, and he gave up 5. You just couldn't write that script. That's a storybook. And oh yeah, let's do it in Colorado. It's weird, but they're also the worst offensive team and the worst team in all of baseball, maybe historically. And that's what happens. It was a wild game. I couldn't believe my eyes as I was watching it, and I almost got sick. I was like, this can't be happening. This is crazy. Day after a deadline too? Come on.
Yeah, the other thing about the deadline, since you brought it up, was the fact that the Pirates got a lot of guys who are, probably not going to be a part of this franchise next year or the year after. I've always tried to kind of frame it in that it's Paul Skeens' time. He's a generational talent, Michael. You want to put as much around him as you can. What was your take on what they did or what they didn't do at that trade deadline?
You know, the one surprise, and Ben and their staff of the front office has so much information. I'm going to speak almost as a dummy compared to what they're using. But from my understanding, like, they were chasing power. They were chasing plate discipline on the offensive side. Didn't really matter which level. So, they're going to push these guys through. They're going to get their opportunities. But the guys that didn't leave are probably the biggest question marks. I understand what he said. But also, we have an at-bat problem on our team. Canario, I didn't even realize he was on the team at one point this year because he didn't play for so long. Jack Swinski, has played 4 times in the last 10 days. That's the biggest problem for me, is with trades, you get opportunity. And who's going to get those opportunities and those question marks? For me, Pop is the biggest question mark. We got to make those decisions. And then with all the trades, we stacked up on bodies. Who's going to get the at-bats? Who's going to get the opportunities? We have four catchers, technically. Luckily, they're almost at every level, but they're going to hit right here. And then Indy's coming back. That make 5 guys that they have value in, or they've traded for, that play a premier position. Who's going to get the reps? And that's the hardest thing when you do all this, is you got to figure that out. You got to answer those questions. And they have a lot of questions right now.
Apparently, Oviedo headed back to Indianapolis today. Michael, what did you make of him returning to the majors and his, as it turned out, one inning?
I honestly believe if he got a redo, he would have just struck out the side, walked one, maybe given up a hit. The reason why I say that is he was amped up, and he obviously wasn't landing his fastball, but his slider landed at 71%, which is an astronomical number. The last 3 hitters, he just pretty much threw all sliders, shows how good the pitch is. I think he would have made that adjustment faster if the game wasn't his first game in 22 months. I thought he looked, you know, physically good the way he answered the questions. He didn't look defeated. He looked like, hey, you know, I'm good. I'm going to move forward. And just the fact that he pitched so well in the minor leagues, you didn't see the walks. You saw the strikeouts. You saw the fastball play. I hate that he's back in Indianapolis. I did not know that yet. I hope him the best, and I want him back here tomorrow. He makes our team better, period.
Paul Skeens, his name always comes up, and Dan Zangrilli had intimated that maybe there's some discussion going on between the Pirates and Paul Skeens in terms of a contract, not one that just would absorb the you know, the arbitration years, but maybe a year beyond that. That seems like a long shot to me. How do you view that, just given the fact that it's early in the process yet, and he still, I think, wants to see more about what they may do in this offseason before he makes any kind of decision?
Yeah, you talk about being in the driver's seat. Paul's in a fighter jet with the leverage he has. Yeah, it's one of those things, like, for Paul Skeens and how good he is, I thought maybe he'd be like a Longoria or a Churio and be signed right before he comes. But with a pitcher, it's very difficult. That'd be unprecedented, but he's unprecedented. So it's going to be something unprecedented, guys, to get him to sign on. And I think the biggest worry for the Pirates is, can you keep him through those arbitration years? He's going to break arbitration. The highest paid arbitration first year, I believe, was Bellinger at $19 million. He's going to probably be about $25, $30 million first year. Mm. And that would be the highest payer of all time. Even the $19 million would be the highest Pirate of all time. So I don't even know if you could take him through 4 years of arbitration, because he'll be in the $40, $50 million range within year three. I mean, think about it. That's wild. Yeah.
And that's why
I hope they get it done.
Yeah, that's why our friend City Limits here suggested the numbers that he did. People don't understand what kind of money Skeens would be making in arbitration. So what was your projection there, Limits?
Yeah, Michael, what I said was 7 years, 370 would be like what I think a realistic deal could be. People rip me because they're like, oh, well, he's pre-arb for another year and the first year of arbitration, that just wouldn't make any sense. And my whole point of the matter was, this is Paul Skeens we're talking about. He's going to break all the norms that have been in past contracts.
Yeah, I mean, I think you'd have to do like a giant signing bonus, maybe a $70 million, $50 million signing bonus, make up for the prior years, just pay exactly what it is worth. They can evaluate that now.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's going to be a big number and a weird number. And they also could get really creative. With Cobra passing away and going to the Hall of Fame, I read his contract. He got incentives for fans showing up. If they went to 1.5, he got 100,000. If they went to 2 million, then he got another 100,000. I mean, you can get super creative with these contracts, and I think the city would band around it. I really do. I think the fight needs to come back for the fans, and whatever that means to the organization. But, like, you know, the fans are upset. They want a winning team, and you have one of the best players, in my opinion, of all time right now in Paul Skeens if he stays healthy. Yeah, you want to see something, and I hope it happens. You know, I'm a huge Bucco fan. I love these guys to death, and I want them to start winning.
Michael, we appreciate the time, man. We'll talk again next week.
All right, Fort.
All right, see you guys. Thank you.
See you.
Bye-bye.
Nice man, Bob. Yes?
Yes, very nice man. No doubt about it. Very enthusiastic about doing his job. I like that.
Fan text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates Personal Injury Law Firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. According to FTN Fantasy Football, and these are their projections, so this isn't based on last year's schedule. According to their projections of things and how they'll go this year, who has the toughest schedule in the whole league, Limits? Wrong. The Giants. Hmm. Bob, who do you think is the second toughest?
Really? The Giants, even though they play a last place schedule?
Yeah.
Interesting.
There's the second toughest?
Yep. Wrong.
The Lions.
The Eagles. The Browns have the fifth toughest, and the Bengals have the ninth toughest.
What about the Steelers?
I don't know. They only go with the top 10. That's the problem here.
Well, if the Bengals and the Browns are in that conversation, certainly the Steelers will be, because they're playing similar teams.
Yeah.
They've got to be, right?
They should be close to that, but I don't have an answer for you, for which I apologize.
No, you just throw up the 10.
Bob, are the Ravens a prohibitive favorite to win this division? I certainly think so.
I do too. I think if I had to bet on one team right now, it would be them.
What if you had to bet on a Super Bowl right now? I think it's going to be the Ravens against the Lions. You?
Could be that. It could also be the Bills. against the Lions potentially, or it could be the Bills.
The Bills are never getting to a Super Bowl.
The Bills are going to get to a Super Bowl.
No, they're not.
They're going to break your heart again.
Their defense still isn't good enough, and when it comes to them against the Ravens, they got outplayed last year and got lucky to win that game, or certainly them against the Chiefs, maybe them against the Texans.
How do you view the Chiefs now that you mention them? Because every year, it seems like more and more people get dissuaded by them. Oh, okay, it's the Chiefs. They don't have as much. Yeah, Patrick Mahomes is still there, but Kelsey's getting older. They don't have enough weapons.
The Chiefs,
do they?
Once they get there, can absolutely get to a Super Bowl because of that guy. Having said that, I think this is a year that they don't make it to the AFC Championship and that their reign in the AFC West at least comes to a one-year end. I think the Broncos or Chargers could win that division.
Broncos, you're putting them up that high. I would
they
say
made
Chargers,
the playoffs last year, and they have a potential star quarterback.
I think the Chargers are due for it too, and I think Harbaugh will have a different effect on that team. So it could be Los Angeles Chargers.
Well, what do you think about the Chiefs? I wouldn't be surprised if they were
gonna,
in the Super Bowl again. I'm just not predicting.
I think they're going to do fine in a regular season, but they won't make it to the Super Bowl, and that'll end that getting to the. Yeah, I don't even think they're going to get to the conference championship. How about that? I think the AFC has a lot of good teams in it, and I wouldn't be surprised if they're on the outside looking in.
Now, having said that, I think they have the best offensive and defensive coordinator combo in the whole NFL. Andy Reid is basically the offensive coordinator, and Steve Spagnuolo is a great defensive coordinator.
And he takes a lot of guys who you don't even know who they are half the time, but
yes.
They get the results that they're looking for because of the scheme.
They have a Hall of Fame potential center in Creed Humphrey, and they have Patrick Mahomes behind him, and then Xavier Worthy, I think, is going to have a good year. I think Hollywood Brown could finally make a mark there. They drafted a new tackle. They sort of redid their offensive line. They have two new tackles, Juwan Taylor from Jacksonville. They drafted Josh Simmons in the first round, and they're always going to play good defense. They just always are. So they're going to be good again. That's what I think.
Oh,
of the
they
Chiefs.
Will be good again, but I don't think they're going to be destined for the AFC Championship game.
You know who might be, Bob?
Who?
Wrong. The Houston Texans. That's who I think.
Maybe. How about Cincinnati? You're not impressed by any of them other than their offense. Can they get?
Oh, I
deep?
Think if Cincinnati can win one more game than they did last year, they're another team that if they get to the playoffs, they could just run it.
Right. But they started the last 2 years
their
terribly.
Defense
they were
still
4-8 last year. They had to run the table, and they still missed a 9-8.
Do you know what their record is under Zach Taylor in the first two games of seasons, Bob?
Like, they haven't won, have they? Or maybe one win in how many years he's been there?
I don't remember how many years he's been there, but the numbers for the first two games, I'll read them to you if you would indulge me, will you,
yes,
Bob?
Yes, please. But I know it's a terrible start.
It's borderline surreal. Is their start. Even since they got good. In 2021, they started 1-1. They lose to the Bears, okay? 2022, they start 0-2. They lose to the Steelers in Dallas. 2023, they start, I believe, 0-2. And last year, 0-2 as well, as my computer dies, Bob. A very ugly death.
So that's one win in 4 years.
They're like 1-8. Over their last two games.
And again,
start.
When you start 4-8 like last year or even the year before that, they were under 500 10 weeks into the season. You're not – the Steelers, on the other hand, started 10-3 last year, and you thought, okay, now you know that end of the season is going to be tumultuous, but it just took over their season and denied them a chance.
I came up with a theory on all this, Bob.
And that is?
That I was thinking and brainstorming and reading and just – trying to come up with a solution to how teams actually win in the NFL, because look at the Bengals and the Ravens last year. Mm-hmm. They played a one-point game and an overtime game. The Ravens win both. If the Ravens lose both and there's a bounce, then the Bengals may be division champs with the Ravens as a wild card. It's that close in the NFL.
It is that close. And they had so many games that went down to the final just a couple of seconds before they lost.
And
they
were
high-scoring games, but they were in position to win them.
I think part of it is random luck, bounces of a ball. Part of it is your kicker. Part of it's your quarterback, and then coaching.
Are you?
And it's can you win games late?
Right.
Because there's going to be so many of them. They're going to decide your season, whether you're the Miami Dolphins or the Chiefs or the Eagles or the Arizona Cardinals. The difference between all these teams is an inch or two. It really is. in the NFL.
But that's what an economic system, the way they have it, sets up. You know, the salary cap works for you because every year you have new potential teams that could win this thing. And I think if you take a look at Baltimore. Okay, so they don't have Justin Tucker anymore. You talk about winning close games late. They don't have what used to be automatic. Now it's Chris Boswell who will take over that reign as the best kicker, I think, in the game. So what happens to Baltimore in those close situations now that they have two new kickers?
Well, he was already starting to blow it in those close situations.
He was, but you know what I'm saying. It was normally reliable.
Well, they have
a
rookie kicker. They drafted that kid.
I understand that, but we've seen rookie kickers.
Yeah.
They can be good. They can
you don't
be
know.
Bad.
I don't know. Here's the other thing about the Ravens that is mind-blowing. They never, never turn the ball over in the regular season, and then they get to the playoffs. I was looking at these numbers the other day. They turn it over more in two games than they do for half their season. It's incredible. And last year, look up Lamar's numbers. My computer's dead. What do you have, 41 touchdowns and four picks? Something like that, limits. And then, Bob, he gets to the playoffs against Buffalo, and he gives up a fumble return for almost a touchdown.
Yeah, that was damaging.
And then a huge interception early in the game, and then you have Andrews drop, which might as well have been a turnover.
Yeah, 41 touchdowns and just four picks, threw for over 4,000 yards.
Team to have a 4,000-yard passer and a 3,000 combined rushing game. I mean, they had 7,000 yards with those two departments, man.
What happens to the Ravens
in the
playoffs?
He had 900 yards rushing.
I don't know. Pressure. Expectations get too high. They don't live up to the expectations. But they're going to have times 10 this year because most people are going to look at Baltimore as the team to beat.
You think so in the AFC? Look up Super Bowl odds limits. My computer's dead.
One of them.
Give me AFC odds to go to the Super Bowl. And I bet you it's Bills, Ravens, Chiefs. Would you say that, Bob?
Bills, I would say Ravens, Chiefs, Bills.
Hmm. And in the NFC, it's got to be Eagles, Lions.
It would be a surprise team.
Rams,
this year.
Maybe?
Would you believe that number one on FanDuel right now is the Ravens?
Yeah, I would.
That's what I said.
I think they're going to win the Super Bowl, actually.
Buffalo, the Eagles, Kansas City, and Detroit.
There you go.
All the usual suspects you would expect going.
How about Detroit is now a usual suspect? How about that?
The next AFC team is the Bengals.
Holy horse milk.
Plus 2,200.
Well, they got their number one pick signed. They're about to sign Hendrickson. Things are
There's no
up.
Way the Bengals should be, I don't even think, maybe ahead of the Steelers at this point. I don't think they should be ahead of the Texans, Broncos, or Chargers. Their defense still stinks.
I think you're really into Denver here. You're making a case that they're going to be one of these. They're a good team, but I don't think. I want to see another year of
Bo Nix.
I do.
29 touchdowns.
What about New England as a surprise team?
Maybe.
Drake May, new coach, Mike Vrabel.
Yeah, not to go to the Super Bowl, though.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying a surprise team.
Don't
accuse
him of
that. The Steelers
have
to go there. The Steelers have to go there.
Now you're going after Bob like intern.
Not at all. The New Orleans Saints have plus 40,000 odds to go to the Super Bowl and win it.
How about the Raiders? They're a team of interest to me. What's
plus
their odds?
11,000 odds to win the Super Bowl.
Do you want
to
combine a bet on the Raiders?
No, I have no interest.
How about
in betting
the Giants?
Raiders. No.
Bob, I'll tell
what
you
about
this
Tennessee?
Much. I'll tell you this much about the Giants. No. You and I just talked about it during the intermission.
Their defense.
Thibodeau, Burns, Dexter Lawrence, Abdul Carter. They're going to be one of those teams that, like the 84 Bears, they're probably not going to get it done because of their offense. They might not even make the playoffs.
Until Jackson
they might stink,
Darts comes in
but
there
they're
going to
take a pound of flesh every game. Yeah, and Jackson Darts having a good camp.
And how about he eventually takes over for Russell Wilson?
Yeah, they have a brutal first five or six games. They're going to throw Russell Wilson to the wolves, and then in will come the dart thrower.
We have to
go, Bob.
Okay.
Limits has taken up too much time. Jeff Hathorn will join us for the final segment.
Broncos country. Let's ride.